with some motivation. So in general relativity, isolated systems are modeled by asymptotically flat spacetimes. So we look at spacetime metrics G that, as you go to infinity, they become the Minkowski flat metric. And here we will be interested in canonical gravity. So the natural place where to impose such conditions is at spatial infinity. So we will be always be talking about this limit will be in the spatial direction. So this is a key if one wants to talk about, for instance, total energy and total momentum. You need to have such conditions. But however, it is not known how to treat asymptotically flat spacetimes in canonical loop quantum gravity. And the tension that makes this difficult is the disparity between, on one hand, the fundamental structures in loop quantum gravity that are discrete and the smooth asymptotic conditions we would like to approach. So the question is if we can, we could somehow merge these two different structures, and a way that I will be discussing today to do so is through this Kozlowski-Zeeman representation. And in particular, we will be able to talk about asymptotic charges such as momentum. So let me now, I will now go into more detail into each of these points, starting first by saying more precisely how we understand this asymptotically flat condition in the context we are interested here. So the classical, our classical starting point is the 3 plus 1 canonical phase space of gravity written in nasty Carbonero variables. And so we have the connection and conjugate field triad E, but now we want to consider such fields living on a three-dimensional manifold that is non-compact so that we can impose these conditions of asymptotic flatness at infinity. And these conditions tell us that the connection has to go to zero at infinity, and the triad goes to a fixed triad E naught that corresponds to a Euclidean flat geometry at infinity. These are the, I'm displaying there what are the kind of leading behavior of the variables as we go to infinity. There are further subleading terms one needs to specify that I will discuss later, which are crucial if one wants to have a well-defined phase space and well-defined asymptotic Poincaré group and Poincaré charges. So already at the classical level is quite subtle how to have a good classical formulation. And what we would like to do is to see if we can incorporate these conditions at the quantum level. So we would like to have kind of a quantization of this phase space. So the question is how to capture these conditions at quantum level, and in particular, if we can talk about asymptotic charges in quantum theory. If you have questions, please stop me at any time or comments. So let me now say a bit more about what are the difficulties of dealing with this in LQG. So the first one has to do with having non-compact manifolds. So this was the case of this infinitely large spin networks on non-compact manifolds was discussed by Salman, Thiemann, and Winkler. And it is a mathematically very difficult problem and technically involved. You have to deal with infinitely many intersections of spin networks. And so that's more like on the technical side of difficulty, but more on the conceptual side. It's really the issue of how to impose the boundary conditions. So. And this goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. From the point of view of spin networks, we have kind of distributional geometries, and we want to approach this smooth, flat geometry at infinity. So one One way, like just a naive idea of how we could try to implement this condition, maybe it could be to try to redefine what we mean by kind of a triad operator. This, I mean, just heuristic here, and kind of add this smooth background piece to it. So that we can have this asymptotic condition. And something along these lines was already explored by Arnsdorf and Gupta. However, doing so naively, you may immediately see that this is at odds with a main principle in NQC, which is diffeomorphism covariance. If you introduce a background field, then you will spoil diffeomorphism covariance. And what this Kozlowski representation does for you is kind of implement this idea in such a way that is compatible with diffeomorphism covariance. So let me now discuss a bit this KS representation. So the idea is then to consider spin networks as excitations over some smooth geometry that is labeled, that is described by an electric, by a triad E. And the key ingredient is to realize this background triad E as an additional label on your state. So similarly as we were with the naive idea we had before, if you look, for instance, at the flux operator, it will have a contribution from this background label in addition to the usual contribution from the spin network S. And the important aspect is that it has a when you can define the good transformation properties under diffeomorphisms, and the idea is that both this background field label and the spin network move together when you apply a diffeomorphism. So this seems well suited for what we want to do. To incorporate asymptotically flat conditions. But just having these states is not enough. We need to understand how one constructs a diffeomorphism and SE2 gauge invariant Hilbert space. And this is already kind of not already difficult, even if you forget about these asymptotically flat conditions. So kind of the strategy that we follow, I mean, our strategy was first to start understanding how to do this. First, just for compact sigma. So, forgetting for a moment what we are interested in, which is asymptotically flat case, and understanding really this representation by in itself in the case of compact manifold. And so that is like our first step. And that was kind of our first two papers were about just focusing on this KS kinematics in the case of compact sigma. And once we understand that, going to what we are interested in, which is the asymptotically flat case. And then see if we can say something about, for instance, asymptotic translations and rotations. So I will here kind of give a very summarized version of this strategy of what we did and tell you kind of the main things about these steps. Let me now focus on this KS, talking about this KS kinematics, just forgetting about the asymptotic conditions, and we come back to them later. So the first thing was to realize kind of the underlying classical algebra in KS. And so this was first noted by Madhavan, that these KS states, since this background field is just a label in your states, you can have states that are, for instance, linear combination of different background electric field label. And this immediately implies that there are operators in your space, which are these background exponential operators. We will see in a second why the name, that implement shifts in this background level. So that they change the value of your background level. And then one realizes that these operators, actually, you can understand them as quantization of these classical functions, which are functions on the connection, parameterized by this F, which was a SU2 valued electric field. And you are doing three-dimensional smearing of the connection with this label F and taking the exponential. So this is just the kind of the usual E to the I experience. Yes. Right, yeah, exactly. And so I will come in two slides. So the SU2 gauge transformation properties of this operator are not as nice as holonomies that we use. Right. So I will in a couple of slides I will discuss how we make this kind of choice of fundamental functions compatible with the SU2 gauge invariant. So I can, but this is an important, yes, and it's kind of the main is behind the main difference between this kind of quantization with the usual quantization we have. So, right, so in loop quantum gravity, so our starting point are these fluxes and holonomies as the fundamental phase space functions. And now we want to consider a quantization in which our fundamental functions include also these non-SU2 gauge, these new functions that have this maybe not so nice behavior under SU2. And the reason, the motivation is the one here, that this the quantization of these functions really are behind these labels that of the KS representation that we want to look at. Okay, so now we will go to the actual the question that it was being asked. And let me first briefly review how we deal with diffeomorphisms and SU2 gauge transformations in usual loop quantum gravity. So this will be our guidance to then tackle this problem for KS. So as we were saying, the choice of holonomies as fundamental functions in LQG is it's because they have very nice transformation properties under diffeomorphisms and SU2 transformations. So under a diffeomorphism, a holonomy along a path gamma just gets mapped to a new holonomy evaluated on the path phi of gamma. And under an SU2 gauge transformation, the new function one gets a holonomy back, just conjugated with two SU2 elements acting at the beginning and end of the point of your path. So once we understand, so this kind of gives us the fundamental transformation properties of our fundamental operators. And what we would like to do in quantum theory is to have unitary representation of diffeomorphisms and SU2 gauge transformations that implement these two transformations on the quantum holonomies operator, on the holonomy operators. And once we have such unitary action, then we can talk about constructing SU2 gauge invariant and invariant Hilbert space. The SU2 gauge invariant Hilbert space is nicely constructed from these gauge invariant spin networks. The diff invariant Hilbert space is more subtle and it involves vectors that are not normalizable on the original kinematical space. But here I'm just doing it very, writing very heuristically, but one can make a precise sense of this type of expression and construct in rigorous manner this diff invariant Hilbert space. So let me now kind of try to follow this idea for our the case of interest. So we have now, in addition to holonomies and fluxes, we have these new functions. And let us see how they transform under diffeomorphisms and EC2S transformations. And under diffeomorphisms, that they have a simple action, a function beta f is mapped to a function beta with a new label that is just the diffeomorphic image of the original f. Under an EC2S transformation, so because the gauge transform connection has two terms, the homogeneous, this first term can be absorbed as an internal rotation on the label f. And this second inhomogeneous piece, because the connection is being exponentiated, comes out as a phase, as a C number phase. So it is not as nice as in the holonomies, but you can still make sense of an action of SU2S transformations on these functions. And that's what now we want to implement in quantum theory. We want to find unitary operators, unitary representation of diffeomorphism and SU2 transformations that implement these transformation properties on the background exponential operators, in addition to the transformation properties for holonomies and fluxes. So maybe that already answers a bit, or maybe not still. We need to. So first, the way diffeomorphisms act, we had already mentioned. And for the SU2S transformations, we need to add kind of, we need to have some transformation law of this type in order to implement the way these transformations on the betas. So kind of the presence of this phase in the way SU2S transformations act on these states is sort of various subtleties that one has to deal. But one can nevertheless construct an SU2H and diffeo invariant Hilbert space, which we do it following the strategy that is done in LQC for the case of diffeomorphisms. So for the experts in the audience, what we do is a group averaging, as in the diffeomorphism case in LQC, but apply to both the diffeomorphisms and SU2S transformations. And this is kind of the main technical difference with loop quantum gravity, that if you ask me what is your SU2S invariant Hilbert space, is really given by such group averaging type of expression, so it's really given by states that are not normalizable on your original kinematical space, unlike the case in loop quantum gravity. But in the same way as one makes sense of this type of expression for the diffeomorphisms in LQC, one can make precise sense of these expressions here. And as I was saying, the presence of a phase involves additional subtleties. For instance, this sum may give you zero, depending on, yeah. Sorry, maybe I should, this sum, this is a similar expression as the one we have for diffeomorphisms, where you are summing over all diff images of your states. Here you are summing over all SU2 gauge related states. So there are kind of infinitely many terms here, and it makes sense as a dual vector, but as a vector, it has infinitely many components, and it has infinite norm. So, I'm of course not giving any detail. I'm just being very heuristic, but it was sort of we studied this in great detail and in the first paper, and really one can bring this KS kinematics at the same level of rigor as the kinematics of fluid quantum gravity. Say it again. Right, I mean, the main thing is that the main thing is that really, in a sense, it's being treated on equal footing as the spin network level. So I guess what we are doing here is kind of the contrary. We are not doing the breaking, but we are, it's not broken, right? It's a, if you have this breaking that you are saying, right, that will be, maybe that will be more of like the first naive idea I was saying of introducing a kind of background field, but that doesn't transform under diffeomorphisms. Right. Maybe that you are saying that could be like more. Right. Right, no, here that you have this relational information is, right, it's there, right. Yeah, no, but yeah, I'm interested in this. Okay, so kind of, this sort of ends the first part of trying to understand this KS kinematics in the just without looking at the asymptotically flat conditions. And now let us go to the asymptotically flat case. Yes. 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 Yes.
Which you're not taking a static specimen as far as the quantity, but if you were, of course, not even the one you could expect to some.
Right. Say it again, the last part.
If we force, you're making a choice, even though classically this depends on data which is already in the phase space.
Uh-huh.
Whereas you're kind of overdetermining.
Yes.
So does it, in the inner product, or is there a completeness relation or an inner product which lets the theory know that actually when you observe will be redundant?
Right, yeah. I think that maybe there is something like that because for instance, something that I wasn't going to talk about, but I think might be related to this, is that at some point we look at what is the kind of quantum configuration space associated to this representation in analogy to what is done in LQC, and it has kind of a product structure. So it's like, it seems like kind of bigger than the, and so maybe the connect, I mean, naively looks like maybe it's too big. I mean, still the smooth connections are dense there in this big space, but somehow you see, somehow it's like much, I don't know if that, you think.
Let's come back to this.
Okay, so yeah.
Your signal is compact.
So far it was so far it was compact. Until now, now I want to make it non-compact.
So you're going to go to non-compact because it's crystal.
Right, now I want to make my three slices to be like R3, for instance, or asymptotically R3. Yeah, now that's yeah, right. And so the main conceptual difference in going to the asymptotically flat case, perhaps, is the fact that now you need to distinguish between kind of gauge and non-gauge diffeomorphisms. And the non-gauge diffeomorphisms, you don't want to mod out, but you want to treat them as symmetries. And since we will be only talking about diffeomorphisms, we will only be able to talk about spatial rotations and translations. And if you want to talk about boost and time translations, you need to deal with the Hamiltonian. So let me say a few more words first about the classical setup. So we follow this the conditions given by Reichen Tietelom and Bego-Murchada. So as I was saying at the beginning, one needs to specify these subleading pieces. So let me start here for the triad. We have the leading piece we were already talking about, and then the subleading piece goes like 1 over r times a function on the sphere. This x hat denotes a point on the sphere, so the direction you are going to infinity. And this function in the sphere is even under a mapping that takes this north pole to south pole. For the connection, it goes to 0 as 1 over r square times another function on the sphere. And then the dots are terms that fall faster as you go to infinity. Yes? Yes, because, yes. Right, we are only looking, we will only be able to talk about the kind of Euclidean subgroup of
Is that enough?
No, I mean, this is part, I mean, this is enough for the kinematic. We are doing kinematics. A full treatment requires the Hamiltonian constraint, which will give you the missing generators that we are not being able to discuss, the boost and time translations. So we are doing part, and let me just briefly mention how this, kind of the relevance of these conditions. So basically what you want is to have well-defined symplectic form and also well-defined asymptotic Poincaré group. And actually, it turns out that to have these two conditions at the same time is quite non-trivial. And so this is one solution, and yeah, I don't know of any other, actually. So basically, let's see how this works for the symplectic form. So basically, when you compute kind of the contraction of a variation of A and a variation of E, since E naught is fixed, when you take variations, the variations of E only go like 1 over r times this even function. So the leading term you have here in this contraction goes like 1 over r to the minus 3 times another function on the sphere. And then when you integrate over r, these dots terms are convergent, and this term here is potentially divergent when you integrate over R, but this term is not there because when you integrate another function on the sphere, it is zero. And the reason I'm spending a bit of time here is that this kind of this mechanism giving you finite integrals is behind many of the expressions we write later. Then if you ask what are the diffeomorphisms that preserve these conditions, then you find they have this form, so you have an asymptotic rotation, an asymptotic translation, and then the remaining terms are kind of the gauge diffeomorphisms. And here also the another non-trivial part of in this treatment is that the what are the gauge diffeomorphisms is not just that they go to zero at infinity, but there is actually a non-zero component of gauge diffeomorphisms at infinity that have this leading behavior, is given by another function on the sphere, and you need, but so you need to treat them in your, in what is your gauge diffeomorphisms. So let me now. So now I want to repeat what we did for the case of compact sigma, in this non-compact case, in this asymptotically flat case. And we need. Let us go back to the functions we had that were our starting point. And we just take these fluxes and holonomies to be bounded, and the functions that will sense kind of infinity will be these background exponential functions. And in order to have these functions well defined, because of the follow of the connection, we need to set this label f with this leading behavior and subleading terms. So this gives us kind of the labels allowed for these background exponential functions. And then, again, we look at how diffeomorphisms and SU2 transformations act on these functions. And one finds that for the diffeomorphisms that I just described before, this they have a nice action on these functions. And sorry, yes, yes. Right, so the philosophy is the same as in the already in the compact case. Yes, so you have these functions on phase space, and they satisfy certain kind of Poisson bracket algebra. And that's what you want to reproduce with the operators with your operators.
Yeah.
But I'm focusing only. But here in the discussion, I'm kind of focusing attention on this guy. I'm not, which is kind of the new function. But for the. But we are treating also the fluxes and the holonomies. That's maybe your question. Where? Right. No. So what you have is like there is a kind of, yeah. I didn't write it down. There is a kind of classical bracket relation between the fluxes and the that you need to reproduce in as operators. Right. Yeah. Right. And okay, so we want to find this. We want to find this unitary action of SU2 gauge transformations and diffeomorphisms that will reproduce this transformation on the operators associated to the background exponential. Let me before discussing this unitary operators. Let me. say a few more words about the kinematical space relevant here. So, okay, I will now omit the spin network label and just focus on this background E label. Now we need to specify what are the labels that appear in these states, and in order to capture these asymptotic flattening conditions, we take the labels to have the asymptotic behavior as the electric fields, as a trias in the asymptotically flat phase space. And the background exponential operators which implemented this shift, they are consistent with this follow-up of the triad, since they are just changing this part here. Yes, they are not modifying the zero leading piece. However, when it comes, we wanted to find this unitary action of the diffeomorphisms and SU2 wave transformations. And we will see there is some small subtlety that I wanted to bring, which is the following. So you see here all our states have this kind of asymptotic zeroth order piece, and the background exponential operators only change kind of the subleading terms when you apply this. When you apply these operators, the zeroth order piece doesn't change. And in particular, you cannot have states that asymptote to zero, right? So what will be like the kind of vacuum state that we usually have is not there in this kinematical space we are constructing. So we cannot have like a construct from a zero state. We cannot obtain an electric field with non-zero asymptotic value, just because these operators are only defined for this label f that goes to zero at infinity. But the existence of this kind of kinematical vacuum is crucially used in loop quantum gravity in order to obtain this unitary representation of diffeomorphisms. And so in principle here, we are not guaranteed that we will have an action of a unitary representation of diffeomorphisms because we didn't have this kinematical vacuum with us. Let us see how this subtlety shows up and how it's fixed. So remember, we wanted to implement this transformation property on the background exponential operators. And the way this transformation was implemented in the case of compact sigma was by a transformation, by a unitary action on the states that involve this phase. But you see the phase here is evaluated in the label of a state E. And it turns out that if you just write down this expression here, this expression diverges. I mean, here this expression is finite, this phase is finite because the label F kind of goes to zero. But when you take this phase for a non-zero, for an E that is non-zero at infinity, then it diverges. The first naive expression you write down doesn't work. However, this divergent piece can be isolated in a surface term. And kind of you can try, okay, let's try removing this divergent piece, which is a surface term. This, as you say, happens only with asymptotic rotations. That these asymptotic rotations are, when you do an asymptotic rotation, I didn't say it, but you also need to do an asymptotic SU2 rotation in order to fix, to keep the triad fixed at infinity. This G naught is this internal rotation you need to do simultaneously to your diffeomorphism rotation. And this G naught is the one that appears in this. This term is divergent. This is just infinity. And but the nice thing was that you just tried to define your action of diffeomorphisms and EC2 transformations by the formula with the finite phase, and then you go with this definition of you go and you check that it satisfies the property you were after, so everything makes sense. But this was kind of a small non-trivial part that in principle didn't have to work, but it worked, so that was nice. So one can then go and construct the invariant Hilbert space by group averaging, as we did for in the case of compact sigma. And then on this invariant Hilbert space, now you have a unitary action of the asymptotic Euclidean group. And here, something we made contact with a nice paper of Friedman and Sorkin from the 80s, where they discuss how, depending on the topology of your manifold, you can have situations where, kind of, in order, these asymptotic transformations, in order to return to identity, you need to do a 4-pi rotation, which corresponds to this asymptotic group that we had of translations and rotations. So usually it will be the Euclidean group of rotations and translations, but depending on the topology of sigma, it could also be this group of SU2 times R3 that you need to go 4-pi in order to return to identity. And in that case, you can have spins that are odd spin. Yeah. You know. Oh, I don't remember. We have, but they are discussing this paper. We can look at the paper and see. I think there are examples there. They call it spinorial manifolds. So, yeah, now I don't remember, but probably that sounds familiar. But yeah, it's a nice paper. We can look at it. So kind of we have a kind of a realization of this idea. And there are many topics I didn't have time to discuss. What I was briefly mentioned before that one can, so far I was discussing asymptotic conditions on the triad, really. I didn't talk anything about how the connection boundary conditions are implemented. So in order to address that, a way to understand that was by going to this quantum configuration space and realizing the kinematical Hilbert space as an L2 of this space in following the what is done in LQG. And in that space, these operators are realized as continuous functions. And the fact that these functions are well defined is taken as the interpretation or as the signature that these quantum connections have the correct fall-off behavior. And also, I didn't discuss anything, but a big part of the technical work went into adapting these fall-off conditions to the setting that is used in LQG. First, the fact that we have not just vector fields, but we really need to deal with the finite diffuse. And second, that both diffuse and electric field and connection are semi-analytic. So let me just conclude here. We have kinematics for asymptotically flat gravity in the context of this KS representation that is at the level of rigor as the LQG kinematics. We constructed this Hilbert space of gauge, SU2 gauge and invariant under this gauge diffeomorphisms and SU2 rotations, and the non-gauge diffeos are symmetries, which are these rotations and translations, and in particular this spin 1/2 from gravity idea is realized in this context. And what we were saying some time back, the Hamiltonian constraint is open, so this boost and energy, I mean, we cannot yet talk about that. And so this is main open. And yeah, thank you very much.
So we're on from here. So in a sense, I guess you had black hole physics in mind or something like this? Or I think that would be useful for any considerations in FPG.
No, right, yeah, I think so, yeah, because, yeah, because for also for black holes, one needs to talk about, asymptotic flatness. So actually, this is one, but nothing concrete, I mean, really. We are now from the completely different angle looking at black holes, but with in Uruguay, but at some point I wanted to see if we could use some of these ideas there. Bianca. Right. Yes. Right. So, yeah. So I didn't talk. Yeah. So, if you were in a Abelian case, first in U1, then it's very easy to see that kind of spin networks arise as distributional electric fields. Then in the non-Abelian case, it's more tricky. We were talking about this with Mark. And then there is a heuristic picture of how that is in the appendix of the first paper. How you could get the spin networks from distributional non-Abelian electric fields, but it's kind of in the non, it's a really heuristic. I mean, it's not precise, but actually, yeah, something I wanted to at some point we'd like to understand better, because really, yeah, as in some sense they are really kind of, maybe they could be treated as same type of labels, the is and the. So the connection is you need to kind of do this. If you do the SU2 gauge averaging, like heuristically, if you take this this electric field distribution along a curve, and then you do kind of this SU2 gauge averaging, then that will be correspond to a kind of a Wilson loop or a spin network state after the. Yeah, but we can talk about it.
In order to fit fermions within the scheme, you need the Brinkmann representations to determine the spin of mass. That requires SL341.
Right.
And, this also gets to the issue of the LQG, usually where the
No, but this is kind of precisely it. We are trying to get there, right? We want to have like a Poincaré group that is realized. I mean, so far what we have is just like the subgroup, the Euclidean subgroup. But the aim is to precisely have like a non-broken Poincaré group. Oh no, but this is the last point. I mean, that will be the biggest. I mean, we really try to, for instance, see if one can.
This has been open for a long time.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, this is. No, no, but yeah, no, your question is.
Important.
Ah. Oh, something else. You mean the classical part? Right. So you are saying classically, if you, I mean, the way right. So somehow the follow-off of the triad and the connection are kind of dual, right? I mean, if you, because you want this product to be, this integral to be finite. So. And in quantum theory we are specifying what we are really specifying is these labels here, the label E that has this behavior and the label F that has this. That's all we are touching, and somehow the conditions on the connection arise because this somehow this one knows about this one. It's like because it's like. Kind of dual. I mean, if I specify this, then this is what you need to have in order to get the integral finite. I don't know if, but that's not what you're asking, right? Right. So yeah. So what I was saying, right? Yeah. Right, so, right. So, what I'm saying is that, you see, this space, I mean, is constructed from this really as a spectrum of an algebra given by this operator. Okay, so this space really only knows it knows about these labels F, and the fact that these are kind of continuous functions on this space, that's like the interpretation that. Oh, these quantum connections are well defined for this beta f. Classically, if my connection is well defined for beta f, means that the connection somehow has a good behavior. But actually, it's not exactly. It's a kind of a weaker condition. So really, yeah, I was too quick. This is really a weaker condition on the what you get is a weaker condition, which is saying that this. Kind of these functions is well defined, but maybe we can talk more.
So the bound states that you're using are named both by spin network functions, which are functions of the connection, and E.
Yes.
And E and A don't commute. So
no, right, they are. It's still all functions on the connection. What you have, the E is a label. So if you see it as a function of the connection, it will be something like heuristically, it will be like you have psi of A. It's like you have the holonomy part, let's say, and then this. So really, you still are working with functions of the connection, but now they are kind of more general functions. Yeah, exactly. Right. So yeah, F is like the E. Yes, exactly. Right. No, I have no idea. No, actually, also Mark was telling me. We were talking about that. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I would like to know about that. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, I would like to know about that more. So. Okay. Thank you.